Joe Keenan leads two literary lives. For 7 years, he served as a writer-producer for the TV show Frasier. During that time, Keenan won Emmys and Writers Guild Awards for his work. And Joe Keenan is also a novelist. His latest book is called My Lucky Star. It's set in a town that he knows well, Hollywood. Here's Joe Keenan reading an excerpt from My Lucky Star.
It is never a happy moment in the life of a struggling artist when some fresh assault on his fragile dignity compels him finally and painfully to concede that failure has lost its charm. He has, up until this point, soldiered bravely along, managing to persuade himself that there's something not merely noble, but downright jolly about struggle, about demeaning temp jobs, day-old baked goods and pitchers of beer nursed like dying pets into the night. He would, of course, grant that La Vie Boheme, with its myriad deprivations and anxieties, was not an unalloyed delight. But whenever its indignities rankled unduly, he could console himself with the certainty that Bohemia was not, after all, his permanent address. Oh no. His present, charmingly scruffy existence was a mere preamble to his real life, a larval stage from which he would soon gloriously emerge into the sunshine of success. Its small embarrassments were, if anything, to be prized not only for their lessons in humility, but for the many droll, self-deprecatory anecdotes they would later provide. Stories he'd polish and trot out for parties, interviews, and, why be pessimistic, talk shows. Then, one day, he is faced with some final affront, minor perhaps, but so symbolically freighted as to land on him with the force of an inadequately cabled Steinway. He reels, stunned, and dark speculations, long and successfully repressed, rampage through his mind. For the first time, he allows himself to wonder if his life 20 years hence will be any different than his present existence. Of course it will be different, coos the voice in his head. You'll be old. From this icy thought, a short road leads to panic, and from panic to despair, self-pity, desperation, and finally, Los Angeles.
Joe Keenan told Steve Paulson about his latest novel.
It's a comedy and a very twisty tale about three wannabe young screenwriters who find themselves embroiled in the very messy, escalating feud between rival factions of a Hollywood acting dynasty, the Malenfant family. The story kicks off when Philip, who is my narrator, a struggling New York playwright, gets a phone call from his best friend Gilbert, who is off in Los Angeles mooching off his mother and her new fiancé, a very rich studio mogul. And Gilbert tells Philip that he and his writing partner Claire have to drop everything immediately and fly to Los Angeles because he's gotten this fantastic lucrative gig adapting a novel into a screenplay for this rich Hollywood producer. Philip and Claire, given their past experiences with Gilbert, are deeply suspicious of this because they know that Gilbert, you know, is very work-averse, is prone to get-rich-quick schemes, and he's a young man whose scruples cannot be glimpsed without the aid of a particle accelerator. But they get on the plane anyway, and they fly to California, and sure enough, the whole thing is way, way too good to be true. The first thing they discover is that the book they've been asked to adapt is this horribly sappy World War II melodrama that Philip refers to as one of those ruthlessly sentimental books that make you feel as if your heartstrings are being plucked with a lug wrench. On page after page, it strains to achieve uplift, and in the case of My Dinner, damn near succeeded. And if that isn't bad enough, they find that Gilbert has obtained this job through an insanely audacious act of plagiarism, one that they're sure will be discovered any day. But as they're reeling from this news, word arrives that this project improbably is going to be graced by the two biggest stars in Hollywood, the legendary screen diva Diana Malenfant, a two-time Oscar winner, pushing 70, and her even more famous son, Stephen, who is the biggest action star in Hollywood. Mother and son have not acted together since Stephen's debut at the age of 10, 25 years ago. And this is very bad news for our heroes because there's no way stars of that magnitude are going to let three nobodies write their long-awaited reunion picture. But Gilbert, being Gilbert, manages to wangle a courtesy meeting for them to pitch themselves for the job. And they arrive at this meeting to find Diana's household in a great uproar because word has just arrived for them that Diana's sister, the washed-up Lily, is planning to write a scathing tell-all memoir, and both Diana and Stephen are up in arms about this and terrified of what Lily is going to say about them because, washed up or not, she knows all the family dirt, including the fact that Stephen, although married, is secretly gay. And it's at this point that Philip, walking into the situation and desperate to win Stephen's approval and to win the job, comes up with an interesting solution to their problem. He says, if you will hire us to write the screenplay, I will pull double duty as Lily's ghostwriter, giving you a spy and an agent of influence in the enemy camp. And so they agree to this bargain, and Philip begins a double life as Lily's ghostwriter and the screenwriter for the next project for Diana and Stephen. But things, of course, get rather complicated from then on. And if that sounds like a lot of story, believe me, that's the tip of the iceberg. That's just setup. We're barely four or five chapters in at that point.
Right. Now, you mentioned that Stephen, this huge action star in Hollywood, is secretly gay. And that's clearly an idea that you're playing with in this story. And it raises the obvious question, is homophobia a major problem in Hollywood?
I don't think homophobia is nearly the problem that it once was in Hollywood. I mean, there were so many out gay people having amazing careers, from David Geffen to Elton John to Ian McKellen. I mean, there are only certain positions in which being gay is a big problem. And I think the male action star is in some ways the last bastion of the closet. You can be a character actor and be pretty open about your sexuality, but people who want to be very big stars and, you know, star in, you know, $150 million movies, the studio is very, very leery about alienating the core audience for those movies, which is, you know, young men 13 to 24 years old who will go and see these movies, you know, four and five times at the multiplex and help them earn $500 million. And so if you were a closeted action star, you will think twice before daring to be frank about your sexuality. But you have a character, Stephen, who is, you know, is enormously frustrated at having to live a lie and wants to have it both ways, wants to, you know, have the public image and have the marriage and have the stardom, but who wants to fool around on the side as discreetly as possible. And in attempting to have it both ways, to have his cake and eat it too, and you could change a vowel in cake, he finds himself getting in a lot of trouble. Philip, in attempting to safeguard, it's a curious undertaking that Philip takes for himself in this book, because where he's done things a little bit more heroic, he's basically signing on to help, you know, a closeted male action star stay closeted, but his attempts to stand sentry duty at the door to Stephen's closet go disastrously awry, and he winds up dragging him into a potentially career-ending scandal, into a sexual sting that puts him in a position that goes beyond merely scandalous to, you know, utterly humiliating, you know, a scandal that if it broke would not only end his career but would make him a global punchline.
Now, it's worth pointing out that you are not only a novelist, you've also worked as a writer-producer for the sitcom Frasier, and now you're the co-creator of the current sitcom Out of Practice, and you are gay. And I'm curious about whether you feel like you have to hide your sexuality at all.
Well, I couldn't if I tried. But I've never felt in Hollywood that I've had to hide my sexuality. When I joined the staff of Frasier, one of the co-creators of Frasier, David Lee, is an openly gay man, and there were a couple of gay writers on the staff. So I missed the period back, say, in the 70s and perhaps into the 80s, where being open about your sexuality was a liability if you were a behind-the-camera kind of person. If you were a writer, I mean, they basically only cared about funny. And I kind of brought, you know, what some people would call a slightly gay sensibility, or at any rate, gay themes to Frasier. The first episode that I wrote for them was a farce called The Matchmaker, in which Frasier invites the station manager home to set up with his housekeeper, Daphne, his dad's physical therapist. And thanks to Frasier's conversation, which naturally strays towards men's fashion and culture and opera and theater, the guy assumes that he is on a date with Frasier. And the fun of the farce was managing to sustain this misapprehension for the longest possible time, and to build on it and to escalate it, to have him at some point assuming. At one point, Frasier says, so you're cool living with your father? I mean, you don't find that cramps your style? And Frasier replies, well, the only problem is when I bring my dates home and the dad tries to steal them, he quips. And so the guy now thinks that Martin is gay as well. And he's stumbled upon this odd gay father and gay son living together. But you just keep building a situation farcically like that. And I did a couple of other episodes of Frasier that explored, you know, gay themes and subject matter in a very lighthearted, very farcical way.
Well, do you feel like Frasier broke new ground? Because it certainly was willing to poke fun at images of masculinity. And a lot of people have said this is a, you know, one of those rare sitcoms, especially back when it first came on, that had a gay sensibility.
I really honestly don't quite know what a gay sensibility is. It's like the definition of obscenity. You can't quite define it, but you know it when you see it. I think that Frasier and Niles were metrosexuals before that term had actually come into being. But, you know, when that was coined perhaps, you know, 5 or 6 years after the show debuted, everybody could say, oh, yes, that's what they are. They're straight guys who behave sometimes like gay men and have very little anxiety about their masculinity being questioned, who sort of follow their own drummer and like what they like and enjoy what they enjoy and don't really give a damn if people presuppose this makes them gay men.
Well, I want to get back to your new novel, My Lucky Star, which is which is a very cynical take on Hollywood, I have to say. The reason that Gilbert and Philip get this screenplay approved is that Gilbert passed off a script that he said he wrote, plagiarized, and I mean, it's Casablanca.
And, yes, it's Casablanca. Well, Gilbert finds himself at a dinner party with somebody who's looking for a World War II script, and he, of course, pipes up that he has one, and then, you know, thinks somehow he's going to come up with a brilliant spec script in a matter of days when he has never, in fact, in his life finished anything longer than a haiku. And so he realizes, well, if this guy needs a brilliant spec script, I could always pass off Casablanca because this particular rather vulgar, you know, producer has bragged at one point in the evening that while all of his contemporaries are, you know, slaves at the temple of cinema, he has himself, in fact, never seen a black and white movie. So Gilbert knows he's rather safe in passing this off just to this one person. But that's Gilbert's character. Gilbert is a con artist. You know, he's very fond of chicanery, and he will do anything. I mean, he is completely, as I said, without scruple when it comes to his objectives. And his objectives was to get this job. And he knew if that would get me the job, fine. And then he's going to very generously put his friend's name on the script because he knows there's no way he's going to actually be able to do the job by himself. So he recruits his friends as co-authors of this plagiarized script and invites them out, not telling them that it's Casablanca, because he knows that Claire's ethical sense would never permit her to be a party to plagiarism. So he, of course, lies to his friends, he lies to the producer, gets everybody together, gets them the job, and it's only when they're in the producer's office and Claire is asking, would you mind citing some favorite scenes from that script? Because Claire and Philip, it should be explained, jump to the perfectly logical, if inaccurate, assumption that what Gilbert has done is stolen a script that they wrote and added his name to their script and then passed it off as the work of all three of them. So they fly out to Los Angeles operating on the assumption that Gilbert has stolen their script. It's only in the middle of a meeting with this producer when he starts talking about his favorite scenes from their script that they realize, oh, my God, he passed off Casablanca as our work.
Well, it raises the question.
You know, stunned and devastated.
Right. Well, I mean, it begs the question of whether any Hollywood executive could really be so dumb as not to recognize Casablanca. I mean, you've worked in this business, and I'm wondering.
Oh, I think there are no end of people in this town who would not recognize Casablanca. In fact, I heard that some wag years ago, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, had, you know, sent it around to development people, had changed the name and changed some of the slugs and maybe eliminated a couple of the most famous lines, and just to see what kind of script coverage Casablanca would get. And a vast number of people were fooled.
God, so the stories we hear about Hollywood, some of them are really true.
Well, I had no trouble believing it because when I came up with the idea that he would steal Casablanca, I, in fact, had never seen Casablanca. I had seen the famous scenes from it in film clips countless times, so I knew all the big moments from the movie, but I had never actually sat down and watched the entire film. So you could have fooled me just as easily if you took care to disguise the most famous dialogue from the movie. If you hear, you know, play it again, Sam, or he is looking at you, kid, or, any, you know, this could be the start of a beautiful friendship. If I saw those lines, I'd say, wait a minute, I think that's Casablanca. I've seen those clips, but I had never actually watched the entire film until I sat down to write this book.
Has your creative experience of writing a novel, is that very different than writing a television script?
Oh, it's extremely different. It's rather gratifying. I have to say that I like the fiction writing better, if only because, first of all, your contact with your audience is one-on-one. It's very immediate. Your work isn't interpreted. It doesn't go through a designer and a director and doesn't have to be acted, which is not to say that having your work interpreted by wonderful people isn't a fantastic experience. It's just that everything that you do is only a means to an end. A script is a blueprint for something, and if a script isn't produced, it really has little reason to be. Whereas if you write a story, it's done, it's finished, and it's ready for its audience. It's ready to go out into the world.
And it's all yours. I mean, you don't have to deal with all these
other
people.
It's all yours. It's not. I mean, the nice thing about working in TV is that it's collaborative, and the nice thing about writing fiction is that it's not collaborative. I'd like to mix it up between the two of them.
Joe Keenan is an award-winning television writer and the author of the novel My Lucky Star. He spoke with Steve Paulson.